The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. Today, we'll attempt to sort out the good information from the bad and set the record straight on your good health. Healthcare and wellness issues can be so confusing these days, with information constantly changing. Let us help you learn what you need to know. Now, here is your host, Dr. Neil Nathan.
Welcome to the cutting edge of health and wellness today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan. I would like to thank our sponsors, Research Nutritionals and Beyond Balance, for making this program possible. Since I personally use these products daily in my practice, as our program unfolds, I'll be mentioning some of the products when appropriate. So, this is a taped show, so please email us your questions and we will address them in our next broadcast. Emailing us would be simply to neilnathan@earthlink.net. I'd like to remind you that you can download the Voice America mobile app, and you can find us on iTunes, Google Playtime, and Kindle, all for free. Well, we now have our own Facebook page, so please go to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today and like us and share us, and you can ask me questions on that site as well. If you would like to consult with me, please see my website, which is www.neilnathanmd.com, and we'll be happy to help you with personal medical problems if you would like to utilize that opportunity. So, without further ado, I am delighted today to have with us Dr. Stephen Jenness, who is a clinician and researcher involved in many areas of medical science. He's board certified in both obstetrics and gynecology, as well as in environmental medicine. He has authored over 105 scientific papers for over 50 different peer-reviewed medical journals, including Lancet, the British Medical Journal, and many other prominent publications. In addition to writing, he lectures extensively. He's reviewed papers for over 70 different scientific publications on a wide variety of healthcare concerns. He served as the women's healthcare physician for an inner-city clinic, worked as an OBGYN at a university teaching hospital, and served as co-director of medical services in a West African hospital. And he's got many, many awards and presentations, and I first met him, although I've heard of his work for many years, at the recent ChiCon meeting in April in the Phoenix area, where he gave a number of lectures, which I had the opportunity to hear, and then I was lucky enough to eat lunch with him one day. He was also presented at that meeting with the Rich Van Kooynenberg ChiCon Memorial Award, which is a wonderful award recognizing a lot of his contributions to medicine. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Stephen Jenness.
Thank you very much, Neil. I am very grateful and honored to have the opportunity to participate in your program. Thank you very much.
Oh, you are more than welcome, and your wealth of information, I'm sure, will be really helpful for our listeners. Now, one of the fascinating things that we can kick off with, Stephen, is you've been an OBGYN for most of your medical career, and yet your more recent interest is in the toxicity of the world and how it affects us. So I think it would be really interesting to learn how, kind of in the heart of a nice boy like you, go to a place like that.
Thank you, Neil. I really enjoyed obstetrics. It's a wonderful profession, and I had a lot of fun delivering babies and having the privilege of being part of that special time in the lives of people. And so it really was great. There were some concerns developing, though. I I was seeing increasing rates of illness that perplexed me. I was seeing more and more obstetric problems. I was concerned about rising rates of prematurity. And so I was concerned about a number of things. I looked after teenagers. I was seeing more and more people with endometriosis, more people with infertility. And I wondered what was going on that we were seeing increasing rates of disease. So some things were also happening in my personal and my professional life. And so I decided to get some further education. So what I did is I was very grateful to be accepted in a postgraduate program in public health. And so I went to the Boston area, and I began to learn a lot about public health and epidemiology. And it was most interesting as I began to learn about the increasing pandemic of chronic disease that was escalating throughout the world. And so I was learning, and it was really a wonderful and enjoyable experience. But while I was there, I unfortunately had a bit of a setback, because in the suite that I was staying in, there the regulator on the gas stove blew one evening when I was asleep. And so I had a pretty significant chemical exposure that set me back for a while. And so it was most interesting. So through my own personal experience, I began to learn about chemical exposures. And as I was, you know, trying to learn and to see what could be done to restore health, and a whole new world began to be open to me. So I learned about toxicant exposures and began to realize the impact that it was having on the world, and the direct link of widespread chemical exposure with the emerging pandemic of chronic illness. I retain a lot of interest in obstetrics and the development of the child in utero, and the profound impact that exposures and deficiencies were having on pregnancy and a developing little one. And so I then enrolled in a program in environmental medicine. I went to some conferences, and it was just wonderful. I met a number of people and learned from a lot of incredibly kind and learned people who had been studying this area for a long time. And so I decided to enroll, and then went on to get a fellowship in that area. And so I then came back to my home and began to practice environmental medicine, and spent half of my time working with patients. And then the rest of the time I devoted to doing research and study. And so that's what I've been doing for the last close to 15 years now. And it has been an incredible journey in terms of, you know, learning and uncovering and understanding mechanisms of disease, and most importantly, beginning to realize why so many people have illness. And more exciting is to actually, you know, find the tools to explore what's causing their problems, and then the interventions that can really make a life-changing difference in their lives. So that's a little bit about my journey.
Well, I think that will make a great show today, to go over all of those things, how we can learn to look for those things as components or causes of illness, and then how we can learn what we can do about it to help people get better. And although I fed you with how did a nice boy like you get to a field like this, it's really an obvious link, in which if you're looking at newborns and newborn health and you're realizing this change in, you know, epidemics, you can quote the numbers better than I can, but massive increases in the rates of C-sections in the last 30 years. We're realizing that newborns, of course, get what they get from their mothers. And so all of the various toxicants that mothers are exposed to, the babies in the uterus are sitting ducks for all of that stuff, and we're seeing the results of that.
Right. That's absolutely what I have been witnessing. And even this morning in my office, I saw a lovely woman who's in her senior years who came in with her daughter, and the woman is having some serious health problems, but all three of her children have MS. And so I've been working with the one daughter and the mom, and it's interesting to, I just received last evening the preliminary results on some of the testing to see that the same toxicants that are in the mother are in the child. I see this over and over and over again. And so what we have now is evidence of women in pregnancy essentially having chemical soup in their body. There have been some cord blood studies that have recently been done where they've actually looked at the blood, at the umbilical cord at birth, reflecting what the child had in utero. And these children in the testing are having multiple toxicants in their body. And so it's hardly surprising that we're seeing increasing rates of pediatric disease, things like autism and other afflictions that in the literature have been directly correlated in many cases with exposure to chemical toxicants.
Yeah, I'm sure you're very aware of this, but one of the most astonishing things about that data that I'm aware of is that almost all of the cord blood samples are high in DDT, which is a chemical pollutant that has been banned for 40 years, and we're still seeing it in the cord blood. I mean, it's a little bit of a wake-up call to us in that, my goodness, we've got something that isn't even supposed to be in the environment, which is still hanging around.
Absolutely. I recently saw a three-year-old boy who has had serious health problems, and when we tested him, he was loaded with DDE, which is a metabolite of DDT, the main metabolite, as well as, about three or four congeners of PCBs, also agents that were banned a long time ago. And so we tested the mother, and of course she has the same profile in her. So the point that you make is really, really important. People assume that, agents that have, been restricted a long time ago are no longer going to be a problem. But because of international travel, where some countries are still having these agents, as well as because of vertical or transmission from mother to child, we are still seeing some chemicals that we thought were gone long ago but are still very much with us.
Great. And you've done a number of particular studies with PCBs, which I'm hoping we'll talk about in a little bit here. But first, I wanted to thank and mention one of our long-term sponsors of the program, which are Researched Nutritionals. They're well known for their specialty immune, energy, and detox formulations to promote a healthier quality of life to some of our most difficult patients. They've long been known for conducting clinical research on their formulations. And particularly in terms of this program, I'd like to mention one of their products is called Trifortify Orange, which is a particularly well-absorbed form of glutathione, which we use in both testing and to help detoxify patients. Many of our patients, and this is particularly relevant to today's discussion, do have significant toxicity, and the glutathione has been a particularly helpful material in both diagnosis and treatment. So I would commend to our listeners that they learn more about this by going to researchnutritionals.com, or you can call them toll-free at 1-800-755-3402. And with that, we'll go to a break.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com. Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have any questions during today's broadcast, you can email me at neilnathan@earthlink.net, and we will try to answer those questions with our next broadcast. If you've just joined us, we have been discussing the global importance of toxicity in our modern world and the kind of effect that it has had on health. And with me today is Dr. Stephen Jenness, who is well known for his research and writing and teaching on this particular subject. Stephen, I think we've kicked this off quite well. When we're faced with the possibility of having someone we think that might have some of these issues, how do we go about evaluating it? How do we take a good history in order to really learn what should we be looking at? What might we be missing if we do a 7-minute quick exam?
Thanks, Neil. In our office, in our clinic, when we see patients, they're generally referred by other physicians. And so the patients that we see usually are people that have had extensive and chronic and ongoing problems. And when we see them, we initially do our best to listen to their story, to find out the sequence of what's happened in their lives, to hear about the experiences that they've been having and the challenges that they're facing. So we initially take that first approach. But our overall focus is that we believe that illness commences because of a cause, and illness persists because the cause persists, and illness can only be, you know, significantly addressed by addressing the cause. So we spend a lot of time focusing on what is causing this person's illness. So as you know, there are some temptations in our sort of fast food medicine world to have an ill take a pill mentality, but it's our belief that it's important to explore causation. So we recognize that toxicity is an important determinant that throughout history has been recognized as a potential cause of illness. So and so, particularly in the current world, we do all that we can to take a detailed history to explore it. So we look at the various ways that people can be exposed to toxicants, and so that would be, you know, the air they breathe and the foods and drinks that they ingest and the things that are put on their skin and the potential vertical transmission from mother and also things that may be implanted or injected into their body, such as dental work and so on. And so we do a detailed inventory in people's lives, and we don't just do it currently, because one of the misconceptions in this area is that if people have been exposed to toxicants in the past, that it's a thing of the past, that it doesn't really relate to now. But one of the major challenges is that many toxicants can persist in the human body. Yes, there are many that appear to be harmless, that the body is able to identify, package up, and unload. But the body has certain mechanisms that facilitate the persistence of some chemical toxicants through the enterohepatic circulation, for example, that will reabsorb various toxicants, and many will deposit in tissues. So the reality is that the half-life of some chemicals can be quite substantial, and some can last many years in the human body. And so it's important not to just get a history of what's happening at the moment, but also to explore what's happened in the past in terms of looking at occupations, looking at travel, looking at home situations, to identify as best as possible all the potential sources of where an individual might have been exposed. And so we do this in detail, and one of the things that I've learned is that by far the most prominent source of exposure is in the air, because people have control to some degree over, you know, their what they choose to eat and what they choose to drink. So many people are looking at the, you know, or, you know, really clean foods and trying to secure sources of clean fluids and so on. But we all have to breathe. And if we look at the relative rate of exposure, we eat typically 1 to 2 liters of food a day, and we drink about 1 to 2 liters of fluid, but we breathe 10,000 liters of air. So if we are living in a jurisdiction or we're within a home where there may be off-gassing, then breathing at, you know, 400 liters an hour, the potential exposure can be very significant. And so sometimes that's an area that is a little bit overlooked, but I believe is the most likely source of toxicant exposures for most children and adults these days, after, of course, the in utero exposures prior to being born.
That's an excellent point. And what would be the substances in air that you find to be the most common ones that will cause problems for our patients?
You know, just as a prelude to that, the World Health Organization recently released a document where they said that they approximated that about 8 million people a year die as a result of contaminated air. And most of that is coming from indoor air and from off-gassing and exposures that are occurring. And so there are many potential places where people get exposed. Within the home, there can be off-gassing from various materials. For example, if carpets have been sprayed with stain-resistant chemical, those can off-gas, particularly if there's in-floor heating, and so, or if they're, you know, resprayed to secure their stain resistance, they can off-gas, and so people can breathe those. And children playing on the floors close to the carpet can get exposed through that. That would be one example. Another example would be in people's mattresses, where it has been customary for the mattresses to have considerable quantities of flame retardants in them, allegedly to prevent fire. There has been some criteria that had previously have been mandated by law, so that people sleeping on beds that have these chemicals in them may potentially be exposed for many hours each and every night. So if we look at other parts of the world, I had the privilege when I was a younger guy of working in Africa and working in Central America. And one of the things that were common is people sometimes did a lot of cooking on open fires in the home, and the family would be exposed to a lot of smoke. So there will be different things depending on the cultures and the practices and the lifestyles, but indoor air is a really, really common source of exposure to contaminants. If we look at the outdoor environment, again, it depends on the region, but for in an area repeatedly, during parts of the year, then people in close proximity will be breathing those. If people are around particular industrial emissions, refineries, and so on, then the things that may come out of the smokestacks and that are being released would also get into the air and potentially cause people to be exposed. And one study that I found particularly sobering was reported in the, I believe, in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health a number of years ago, done by a Dr. Knox in the UK, where they looked at cancer deaths in children and teenagers over, I believe it was a 15-year period, and they compared those to the birth address. In other words, where the mother was living during the pregnancy. And in this study, they found that cancer death in children and young people directly correlated in almost every case to where the mother was in the pregnancy. And so this concern about exposures and in the air is really important. And thus, one of the things that we really focus on in our clinic is securing clean indoor air exposures and educating people about potential sources of exposure so that they can protect themselves.
Well, if you don't mind, a personal question. When you were in Boston and you got sick, what were you being exposed to?
Well, I think it was the natural gas leak that was coming from when the regulator blew on the stove. And so it was what was coming from that. I'm a little bit hesitant to talk too much about me personally, I think that's what happened.
Then I won't push that. I will merely use the example when I lived in San Diego for a number of years, and then San Diego was well known for when we hit what was called an inversion, Los Angeles air would blow down into San Diego, and it was very obvious when that was happening because my eyes would be burning and stinging, and taking a deep breath hurt, and that isn't anything typical for me, and it would be happening for almost everybody around me. So it's obvious in a smoggy environment how what you're saying is relevant, but I think people aren't appreciating necessarily that it doesn't have to be that obvious for it to be affecting us in profound ways.
Right. You know, in my case, it was a beautiful area that we were residing in. It was just something that it was unfortunate that happened in the kitchen when this appliance malfunctioned. But what you say is precisely true, and it's another point of import there is that, you know, when they do air quality testing, they're only usually testing for five common pollutants. And so it may appear, or there may be reports that the air quality is fine, but they aren't necessarily testing for contaminants such as, you know, certain pesticides or certain solvents that may be released from industry. And so it's important that people be aware of the area that they live and any particular concerns in that regard, and that they secure good quality air within their homes.
Yeah. Again, one other area that to me would be super common that not everybody knows about is formaldehyde exposure from outgassing of a wide variety of products, including lumber, which is treated with formaldehyde to preserve it better. That's often a biggie for some of our patients.
Absolutely. As you say, there are a number of places of potential formaldehyde exposure in the house, and another one can be wrinkle-free bed coverings as well as particle board, and so absolutely another important consideration within the home.
Yeah, and we do see that also in fabrics, for example, which use it. Many fabric stores have a higher than acceptable level of formaldehyde in the air, and I don't think people always realize it.
One of the things that we do in our assessment of people is that we do a home evaluation. We're using various technology and testing equipment so that we assessed for things like formaldehyde and VOCs and particulate and mold and things, radon and various things. And the home evaluation can be very eye-opening and can make a life-changing difference when things are found.
Well, that will be a perfect segue into the next segment. But first, I would like to talk about our other wonderful sponsor for this program, which is the Beyond Balance Company. And again, particularly relevant to what we're talking about, they make a number of products to help with detoxification that I'm particularly fond of, as listeners to this program know. They make two products that are called ToxEase, T-O-X-E-A-S-E. They make one in glycerin, which is called GL. It's a liquid product, which very well tolerated. We often use it in children. They also make a somewhat stronger product in capsules called ToxEase 2. Both of these are mainstays of the materials that I use to help the liver and GI tract detoxify. And so it's definitely a product that I commend to my listeners, and I would encourage them to go to www.beyondbalanceinc.com, or you can call them at 800-332-7713 for more information. And with that, we'll go to another break.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan. I'm delighted to be joined today by Dr. Stephen Jenness, who has been doing research and writing and studying environmental health for many years. And we've been talking about just that in the first part of our program. So, Stephen, you had just begun to talk about how you begin to evaluate for toxicity when you're faced with someone with chronic illness where you're trying to figure out what's the cause. And I would like to echo what you had emphasized before, that it's all about cause. The key to treating people who are chronically ill is to understand what's causing it so you can fix it. And with that, I'm in complete agreement.
In terms of our approach, so as indicated, we first of all take an extensive history and we do an inventory to try to identify where exposures may have been. So we're looking at chemical exposures, electrical exposures. We look at biological exposures such as mold and mycotoxins. And so we try to get a detailed history when looking at the toxicity end of things of adverse influences that may have contributed to the person's health problems. So we initially then do that by taking a detailed story. We do a physical exam. And one of the fundamental components of our approach is to try to assess where the person is currently living and perhaps where they're working. And so we have designed a sort of, we call it a home evaluation, which may extend to the workplace or the school or whatever. And so we try to determine, are there ongoing exposures which may be interfering with this individual's propensity to heal and repair and detoxify? Because it's a little bit of a challenge to try and detoxify people if they're still being exposed on an ongoing basis. So in terms of investigating, so we try to see if there's ongoing exposures. So we have equipment and we assess their environment, and we prepare a report as best as we can to determine the air quality, is there adequate ventilation? Is there exposures going on within the home? We look at the area where people live and we design sort of as best as possible a means for them to get the best air quality in their home. So that's the first thing, the third thing that we do. The final thing that we also use, which is very valuable to us, is we do a number of personalized investigations, so we're laboratory testing. So in this capacity, we endeavor to identify the body burden of toxicants within the person. So we will do blood and urine testing typically on people. In the past, we have also done some sweat analysis, and we try to determine the total load as best we can in terms of what the person has in their body. So the first thing that is important in this regard is that we mobilize the toxicants from the tissues, because sometimes people think you can just do a blood test and that will reflect what's within the person. But that can be misleading, because the half-life of some chemical toxicants, such as lead, for example, in the blood, it's relatively short. It can be, 30 days or so. But in some tissues, like the bones and the brain, it can last for decades, the half-life can be. So sometimes you can do testing on people's blood or urine and find nothing, yet they may be have considerable quantities stored up in their tissues. So we use some techniques to mobilize the toxicants from their storage sites. We get them into the blood and the urine compartments, and then we collect them and send them for toxicological analysis. So in our clinic, we do a few screening tests where in total we're testing for in the range of about 75 common chemical contaminants. And so that's been extremely helpful, and we wait for the results and then put it together with the history and the home evaluation to determine, and we develop a plan. So in our clinic, we have a program that we call the Optimal Health Program, whereby we do this detailed assessment and do all that we can to address what's going on with the individual.
Okay, let's get a bit more specific, and just for purposes of separating them a little bit, in the way I think about it, there's a big difference between organic versus inorganic toxicants. And by that I simply mean inorganic would be things like heavy metal toxicities, and organic would mean most of the rest. So if we separate out that way, just arbitrarily, how do you specifically look at, first of all, heavy metal toxicity, lead, mercury, aluminum, cadmium, that kind of thing?
Right. Just to affirm what you're saying, that's precisely the sort of breakdown in the way that we approach it. So we look at inorganic chemicals, typically looking at the various heavy metals that can persist in people, and then we break it down also then to the organic chemicals. And in the organic chemicals, we look at various groups. So we're looking at synthetic chemicals, we're looking at biological toxins, We're looking at byproducts of some processes, petrochemical products, and so on. So in the, to respond with regards to looking at metals, we, you know, there is no perfect test. Some people focus, you know, on, you know, the common heavy metals such as lead and mercury, arsenic, cadmium, and aluminum. But our testing is a little broader because we're finding, you know, considerable amounts of things such as thallium in people. And some people who've had chemotherapy will have a lot of, you know, platinum in them. And people who've had MRIs will have metals like gadolinium in them. And so these various metals can be persistent and can cause symptoms. So initially, as part of our testing, we also do detailed biochemistry and organic acid testing and trying to determine metabolic pathways to see where there may be dysfunction. And one of the tests that we do in a biochemistry test includes a blood test for toxic elements. So we initially get a blood screen for toxic elements, which is very helpful for some elements. And so we initially try to mobilize toxicants again into the bloodstream, and so we get a blood toxic element analysis. As well as doing that, we then do a provoked testing procedure where we use an agent to bind metals, and we then collect urine to get an assessment of metals by that modality as well. I know that there are various methods that people use. Some people will look at nails, like fingernails or toenails. Some people will do, you know, hair analysis. Some people do porphyrin testing. So there's a whole scope of ways that individuals use, and I think that there are pros and cons of each, and that there's no perfect test. But in our experience, doing a blood screen after mobilization and then a challenge test where they are given something to mobilize and then bind metals and then collect their urine over the next number of hours has been very helpful to us when combined with the history. So that's kind of the approach that we take.
Yeah, that's been basically our approach as well, and I would have similar observations, meaning I would agree that there's no perfect test, but provoking is a really important thing we found in order to really know whether something's there or not. Just to be a little bit more specific, for example, when we test for mercury, we have found that intravenous DMPS is a particularly good agent to help us know whether that's in the system. By the same token, that particular material is not as good for other materials, so we've used EDTA and DMSA and various combinations to pull, if you will, some of the heavy metals that are there into the urine, so we'll actually get a better picture of what we're looking at.
So I agree.
Yeah, I think that's
I agree. One of the things that I have found, just to share a comment, is that I use liposomal glutathione prior to doing the provocation and binding of the metals. And I have found that by doing that a couple of hours prior to giving the agent that binds, whether it be DMSA or EDTA or whatever, that it really increased the excretion of these compounds very substantially. In some cases, when I started doing this, I have used oral DMSA for binding mercury, and when I used the glutathione a couple of hours before, I found that the excretion rates increased very substantially. So that's one, one thing that we found to assist in the process.
Yeah, that's been our experience as well. So let's continue with that as we also move into how to treat this. We're kind of partway there already. So let's go to another break for right now.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I am delighted to be with Dr. Stephen Jenness, who has been helping us to understand more about the environmental toxicity that we are currently living in, how to evaluate it, and how to treat it. And before we went to a break, Stephen was telling us about using sweating and glutathione as a way of mobilizing toxins so we can get a clearer and more accurate reading of what's actually in the system. And I would like to add to that, as many of the listeners know, we use that particular combination in helping to test for mold toxicity as well. The new testing that we found very helpful, which is measuring mycotoxins in the urine, this turns out to be much more accurate when we give glutathione and we have our patients take a sauna before they collect their specimens. Often that will give us a much more accurate idea of what's really in their system. So, Stephen, we have so much we can talk about here, but I know you've done some actual research on sweating and what we learn from it and what kinds of things we can get out of the body with sweating. So why don't we proceed to talk about that now?
Thanks again, Neil. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and to share a few ideas. With regards to sweating, when I was learning about environmental medicine, there was a lot of discussion about the use of sweating and putting people in hot boxes and so on. And being a little bit of a science geek, I was concerned about recommending things to people where there wasn't scientific evidence. So I reviewed the medical literature and historical literature with regards to the use of sweating, and there was some preliminary information about the release of certain chemical inorganic and organic compounds through sweat. But there was many chemicals that had not been tested for, and so I wondered if this really was a credible means to unload toxins that were within the body. And so I had the opportunity, with the enormous assistance of a toxicologist, Dr. Burkholz, to do a study. And so what we did is that we took some healthy people as well as some people that had illness, and we decided to collect their blood, their sweat, and their urine to compare and see what we would find. I wanted to collect T tears as well, so I could call it my blood, sweat, and tear study. I thought it would get a lot more attention. But anyways, we collected blood, sweat, and urine. I'm just joking, of course. And so what we did is we took blood and to see what kind of levels people had of a whole variety of toxic elements, as well as various chemical compounds. And we collected their urine and then their sweat as well to see what actually came out in sweat and what didn't. And it was most interesting. We've been talking about, you know, toxic metals. And what we found that there was a huge variation in what came out in the skin, and that with sauna therapy or with exercise or whatever means people used to sweat, that there was significant variations in the metals that came out. And one of the challenging heavy metals is cadmium, because it is extremely toxic. It has a long half-life and causes a lot of damage. And it's not necessarily the easiest agent to remove, and can potentially cause kidney damage if it's mobilized too quickly. And so we were very pleased to see that for every unit of cadmium that we found in the blood, there was about between 85 and 90 units in the sweat. So it appears to be a very effective means to eliminate cadmium. We found with aluminum it was effective. With lead it was very effective. Not so much so for arsenic or for mercury, in fact. And so there was huge variations in this. And so we thought that that was most interesting. We also did not find a lot of difference between whether people, got their sweat from exercise or whether from an infrared sauna or whether from a steam sauna. So for metals, that was a particularly notable finding. And if people are interested, this research is available online. But we then went on to look at various other chemicals like plastics and perfluorinated compounds, and which are stain-resistant compounds, and we found huge variations. For example, the PFCs, or the perfluorinated compounds, the ones that are found used as stain resistance, we had no evidence of it coming out in sweat at all, whereas other agents appeared to come out abundantly. So there was huge variation. So in conclusion, our results showed that, you know, it's really important to try to get a handle of what people have in order to personalize a detoxification regimen depending on what they have in their body.
Yeah, let me emphasize some of the points you're making, Stephen. It's critical that we realize that certain things that are able to bind and remove toxins from the body are not universal or global. Another quick comment about a research project I know you did used compared cholestyramine and chlorella for their ability to pull the PFCs out of the body, and cholestyramine worked well and chlorella did not. So it's very important that when you read or hear about globally good detoxifying agents, I want to emphasize that I don't know that there are globally good detoxifying agents. You need to be pinpoint about what you're trying to get out of the body so that you can know what actually works for that. It's not this kind of global, you know, use colonics, use sweating, use this, and whatever is there will all come out. It's not that simple, and the point that you're making is super important. You really need to know what you're treating and do it with specificity.
Thank you, Neil. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
So part of this is, let me encourage listeners to go to Dr. Jenness' website, where he has published, literally, there's more than 100 papers that he's written that you all might find very interesting and very detailed. It's a wonderful resource. Our time together, Stephen, is growing short at this particular point. But I so thank you for your coming on the show and sharing your wealth of information with us. And we'll encourage our listeners to read more of the stuff that you've written and learn more, because really your health depends on it. So again, Stephen, thank you so much. And to all of our listeners out there, be well.
Thank you, Neil. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you again for joining us for The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Please join Dr. Neil Nathan again next Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And this week, apply what you've learned today to enjoy better health.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.